far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode, we get to review Gundam The Origin 3 OVA, Dawn of Rebellion. Took a long ass nap. An hour and a half goes by, and I'm like, you still on that lunch break there, buddy? And then I didn't hear from you until like 30 minutes ago, mm-hmm. or whenever I messaged you, and you're like, yeah, I had lunch, and then I watched Finding Nemo, and then I like went into a coma, and I'm like, so are you saying Finding Nemo is not a movie but a sleep aid?
I mean, it was nice to see it again after all this time. I wanted to see it before I would see the sequel, but I don't know when I'm going to actually see the sequel. I might just wait until it's at the Dollar Theater or something.
Yeah, dude, you got to see it with the handicap school or whatever. Like, I'm going to sound like a wheel too. No, there's actually like, I mean, I saw it with Dory last night, so she was like watching her own movie. She doesn't suffer from short-term memory loss, but... On certain things, that's up for debate, but she won't admit it. I don't know if she's ever going to listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't, that's not her main, that's not even close to her main flaw. So, but, no, like, it was the fact that, like, there were so many quotes in there, and, like, after the movie, I'm just making fun of her. Like, Dory, like, speaks to whales, so, like, they talk to each other like they're whales. They're like, Dory, you gotta go that way. And then, you know, I'm out in the parking like, Dory, the car's over there.
Yeah, that was in the first one, too. I guess yeah, they probably reused a lot of gags for this, huh?
Yeah, it was just, she had more of a fun time with the movie than, like, I did. Like, no, I still enjoyed it. But, like, for her, she was just, like, having, like, a really fun time with it. And, it was a good, like, Finding Dory's a really good movie. And, like, I didn't feel the need to see Finding Nemo again to try to make sense of it. Because like I said on the chat last night, it was basically, you know, like the movie, Finding Dory is going to explain what happens in the first movie. And you can kind of already figure out that things went pretty well because Nemo was in the second movie. Because obviously they found him. So that kind of explains everything. And they mentioned some things in the first movie, but like that's like all you need to know. And this one was like, sort of Finding Dory, but then also like her looking for her parents, and so it was heartful. And yeah, it's like a kid's movie, so people that are like these millennials thinking that it's their movie and claiming like you have to, like, how dare you like watch this without seeing the first one, it's like it doesn't matter, kids aren't gonna care.
Yeah, let me pull up this meme that I don't know who posted it, probably Daft, maybe Josh.
It was like thinking Cloud.
Cloud, you could be. But it was like some idiot millennial who... Okay, yeah, it was Cloud. This week, when Finding Dory comes out and the C is capitalized and comes out, like it's the movie that's revealing itself to be gay because there's a lesbian couple in it, supposedly.
It's not even confirmed that they're a lesbian couple. It's literally two girls, and there's a scene where like Dory happens to bump into them.
It's in the trailer.
Yeah, well, like, she's in, a plastic lid with water in it or something, and then, like, there's an octopus pushing her on this cart to try to get to this area, like, this aquarium. And they bump into Dory, and, like, they look down at it, but then they realize it was, like, Like, they got freaked out by the octopus or something, and then they scurried off. It was literally less than 5 seconds. That's the whole scene.
Yeah.
And you can't confirm if they're a couple or if they're sisters. I mean, like, no kid's going to pick up on that, that, you know, oh, they're definitely lesbians or something. It's like, they're probably like, oh, it's just two people, and they're probably sisters. Maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, it's pretty silly. There's people, like, reading articles about how if you don't think that they're lesbians, you're some sort of hater or whatever, but... I mean, I haven't seen it, but it's like, does it really matter? It's not like they're showing them having lesbian sex or something. How can you confirm that?
If you take out that scene from the movie, it doesn't affect the movie at all in any way. It's just there for like a quick giggle, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. The next part of the meme says, I do not want to have to knock y'all little kids out of the way, but I will. Don't take your kids to see the movie. Let us 90s babies go see it first, because we've been waiting on this since Finding Nemo. If your child is younger than 12, he or she simply will not appreciate it. Y'all can buy the DVD when it comes out, but don't be tryna, T-R-Y-N-A, crowd the movie theater with your crying babies who see only fish. This is serious business. I and we will knock your little munchkins down. So apparently, this is some person who takes it very seriously.
I'm not understanding that.
Yeah, I don't think it's very loving, except towards themselves.
Well, you know, John, I don't qualify because it said for 90s. I mean, I don't know if like the term 90s kids is the kids that were born in the 90s or the kids that grew up in the 90s. Because like I was born in the 80s and I grew up in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this may specifically register for people that were born in the 90s. And they still claim that they're 90s kids. And they're 90s kids is counts if you live through the whole decade, is the way I understand it. But, like, I mean, Finding Nemo came out when I was, like, 17 or 18, and I was like, no, it's a Disney movie, I don't care. And then I never saw it, despite how many people told me it was good. And I know I saw it in the past 5 years. And I think I might have saw it on Disney TV one day or something, and I was just like, oh, this is actually a pretty good movie. And, like, I've seen it once, I know what happened. And I'm good with that.
Yeah.
And zoom tight.
Yeah. I think probably they mean people who were born in the 90s, because it came out in, like, I think 2003 or 2004.
Yeah, so if they were born in the 90s, it would have been, like, maybe less than 10 years old or maybe less than 12 or something. So it's like, oh, it pertains to us because that's, you know, we grew up with.
Yeah.
But, like, it's interesting because that claim doesn't happen for people that, like, oh, how dare you kids go see Toy Story 2 and Toy Story 3.
I bet there were people who did stupid memes like this for that, too. But who knows? I mean, it's like the obnoxiousness is easier to see now because Cloud's always posting these tweets from various idiots in the chat. So it's like we get a sense of just all these idiots that he follows.
Yeah, well... You're saying that they did the same thing for Toy Story 3 or not?
I never saw any evidence, but, you know, it seems like there's stupid fans either. For everything. That one was, I think, that was like 2009 or so. I'm not sure when that came out exactly. Maybe 2010, but it's been a while. But then they're supposedly making a fourth one, which there'll probably be memes like this for the fourth one, too, where people are like, you have to keep your children out of the movie because it's annoying. And then Daft was like... chiming in, and he seems sympathetic towards the meme at first, and he was saying like that he goes at late night showing so that he can avoid children.
I don't know why. I don't know. I mean, I went to like a 9 o'clock showing and there was some kids in there, but like I kind of expected that. Like it was mostly like adults and teens that went and saw this. It was like half the theater was teens.
Mm-hmm.
So
he says, I have been to a number of showings for PG-13 films that had 5-year-olds. Oh, really? Shocking. I mean, really, half the PG-13 movies these days are things that are obviously aimed at little kids, like all the superhero movies where they have Happy Meals and kids' meals coming out for the characters, and they've got toys advertised on TV with them. Like, even though it says PG-13, it's not actually made for 13 and up, you know?
Yeah, it's like, you know, if you're a kid seeing an Avengers movie at PG-13 with, like, 4 swear words, you're like, holy crap, this movie's awesome.
Yeah. And then he says, and I went to the 9 to 10 p.m. showing to avoid kids. People are so fucking rude. Like he is not rude, the guy who spent $130 to get a soft tune video.
Yeah,
and then really, harassed us over it for hours.
Yeah, I think the word is hippocrypt.
Then he says,
that's it.
The point of the image is that they don't want kids ruining the screenings, and kids don't need to see it day one. Not that kids don't care about it. And then he says, I don't think they meant kids shouldn't see it at all. They meant it as 13-year-old, I waited 13 years for this shit, your stupid kid wasn't even alive at this point. The image is poorly written, but I understand the gist of their argument. And then he says in parentheses, which I don't really agree with, after he spent like a bunch of time saying like...
Yeah, defending it.
Yeah, great point to keep the kids out, even though it's a kid's movie about some fucking fish, you know? Like, come on now.
I don't even get the argument. I mean, like, it's all of it stupid.
So. And then Josh was pointing out that it was on TV. Like, on you know... Disney Channel and stuff all the time. So, like, even kids who didn't see it in theaters have probably seen the original, so...
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of silly to act like it's just something that only people who are born in the 90s are going to appreciate when people who are older than that and younger than that have seen the movie, too. And, like, I mean, I saw it in theaters when it came out, but I don't think that, like, I need to be the first person to see it. I mean, I can wait, like, a month or two, like... I don't even care if it'll give me a discount because movies are too expensive.
Yeah, I mean, it was more of a dinner, not a dinner, but it was more like a date movie thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I used my student discount, so like really for two tickets, it was like $14.
Yeah, that's about what it is here too.
Well, like I used a student discount. If I didn't, it would have been like $16 or $17 or something ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But Anyways, the moral of the story is entitlement and what it can do to you.
Yeah. Don't be someone who thinks that only you should be seeing movies, because if nobody else sees movies, then no movies are going to make money, and they're not going to make any more sequels to movies you like.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to see them in a crowd if you're going to see them in a theater. Otherwise, just wait for a DVD.
Or just pirate it, because that's what you do anyways.
Yeah, that's what Daft would say. Just pirate it. Why go there and listen to kids?
Why is the point of movie industry? There's a bunch of crooks. Just pirate everything.
I am surprised he even goes to see movies in the theater, considering he has such an anti-paying-for-things mentality.
Yeah, he. I like how he says it, like, TV's for poor people, but he won't pay for anything.
Right.
His logic is invalid. I don't know, man.
That's something you can never admit to if you live in New Hampshire. You know, you have to refer to everyone else's poor people and peons and whatever, peasants. He has like these very contemptuous terms he refers to normal people with.
Well, for Josh living in New England, he's doing pretty good for himself.
Well, Daft says that New England... For New England, Connecticut is like a poor people state, and all the real New Englanders live in, like, New Hampshire. And if you live in Connecticut, you must be living in some sort of low-income slum, even though I bet it costs a whole hell of a lot more to live in Connecticut than, like, 99% of the other states.
Yeah, like, I don't see their gas being lower than South Carolina, and South Carolina is one of the states with the lowest, like, gas tax, so...
Yeah, and Connecticut has, like, all these billionaire hedge fund managers who live there, who commute to New York. Like, that's not a poor people state. Come on, Daft.
He's never going to listen to this, so that's why I'm saying all this.
Well, I hope this airs on Tune Radio on his supposed block, and he'll be like, how dare the Mason air programming that's bashing me on my own block?
How dare Mason support people that are not from the North? I'm from the South, and you're from the Midwest, West Coast, so.
Yeah, so, not exactly a Northeastern podcast. I've never been to New York or New England or anything.
I've been to New York City once. I lived up there when I was very little as a kid, and I've been in Newark, the airport, when I was coming back from a missions trip like 15 years ago. That's pretty much all of the North. Oh, I even been to Connecticut once to visit a friend back in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I've been up there a number of times, but it's been 13 plus years since I've been up there. Not really like die hard wanting to go up there again anytime soon unless I have to, so.
Not wanting to go to Anime Boston and see a bunch of naked people and lying out in the cold.
Yeah, and their underwear and complaining about it. That didn't interest me in the slightest.
They might lynch you if they find out that you ran that troll account on their forum where you were saying banned cosplay.
Yeah, maybe I'd just like write on my tag like I was Zeke the Freak and just see how many people remember that name.
You're the cosplay hate criminal.
Burn him at the stake. Well, we're 15 minutes into this call, and we haven't even talked about our main topic or even introduced ourselves.
Oh, good point.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, otherwise I could have been like, oh, I could just edit this for closing remarks, but nah, I think we're okay.
Yeah.
All right, so well, I'll just make a time note and just be like, hey, this is Dustin's Finding Dory review / Why We Hate Millennials segment.
Well, right. At least you liked the movie, and your girlfriend did.
Oh, yeah. It's a good movie. So that's what I was expecting, and that's what it was. So, like, I didn't have any expectations seeing it, because I was like, it's a date movie, as long as the girlfriend's happy. And she was. So that's what counts.
Yeah, I'll see it at some point. Right now they've got it, the $2 theater Zootopia playing, so I'll probably see that there at some point, and probably that'll draw a lot of the
Zootopia was a really good movie too.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I've heard pretty good things about it as well.
Yeah, I was surprised how good it was.
It's not a Pixar, but it's like just a regular Disney movie, I guess. But it's got pretty good reviews.
All right. Let's go ahead and kick off introductions. Almost 17 minutes in.
Yeah. Okay, welcome to the Anime of Yesteryear podcast. This week we're doing another Gundam review, Gundam the Origin, the third OVA.
I think it's Dawn of the Rebellion or something.
Right. Which, this one starts off with a recap of the previous OVAs, which goes on for, I don't know, 5 minutes or so.
Yeah. And well, actually, we haven't even done... introductions. I'm Dustin. You're John.
Yep.
And that's all you need to know in case this is your first episode ever. So, we watched Gundam the Origin. Like, I had it on my computer a few weeks ago, and we're now getting around to actually watching it. I kind of forgot that I had it on my hard drive until I remembered, like, a couple days ago, and I was like, ah, crap. We gotta, like, watch and review that eventually.
Yeah, we were like, oh, we've got some Gundam stuff to review, so we watched Evolve and then this one.
And then, like, we would watch it sooner, but I was like, I'm going to an amazement. I have a lot of work to do. I'm starting an internship, so... Yeah. I had a number of things happen in the past few weeks.
And plus, we had all those other reviews to do as well, like Deadpool and E3 and all this other stuff that we did. All that stupid contract shit that took up so much time.
That didn't have to take up our time.
Yeah, that was a total waste of time.
Yeah, we only have ourselves to be angry at. But anyways, yeah, like, this one started out with, like, a recap episode of what happened the past two OVAs. I mean, it summed it up in about 5 minutes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they hit on just the high points of it. And, I mean, as far as I know, like, it starts out where Char or Eduardo or Casval and the real Char is basically, like, Casval setting into plans into motion on, like, how to basically get into the Zeon Academy without really being noticed as being the son of Zeon's dumb Zaikun. Or Zum, and so there's like a plan where he basically like brings in an antique pistol, and apparently he plants it on Char, and then like Char's like flipping out like, oh, I don't know like where this came from, and then Casval's like, hey, or Eduardo I should say, is like, hey, I got an idea. So they switch places, and that's supposed to help the real Char get into the academy, and they like, because then Char, and then Casval is like playing the role of Char now, of like, oh, it was my mistake in putting the gun in there. I'm sorry. I have a change of heart or whatever. But that's really his plan to completely, like, he stole his identity. And this is kind of what we see. Like, we start seeing, like, Char's revenge being put into motion where, like, he starts using people. And in this case, he kills off the real Char's novel and takes his name after the shuttle explodes, which all of this happens in, like, the end of the fifth Gun of the Origin manga.
We're supposed to assume that in the explosion that was done by the zombies to try to kill, you know, the new Char, you know, Casval, right? They thought that they were going to kill him, but they ended up killing the original Char.
Yeah.
And then Char knew that it was going to happen, or, you know, the new Char knew that, so he put the other one on there to make the zombies think he was dead so that he could go undercover and train at the military academy.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's kind of like, once you have to, like, talk and think about it, the plan makes sense. But, like, when I'm watching it, I'm just like, this is, like everything that was set up, it's, like, so, like, meticulous in how exactly how it happened. And I'm just like, that would not happen to me at all. But that's, like, how Char works in terms of, like, plotting out, like, how to manipulate people to his own end.
Uh-huh. And there was, like... You know, he uses Garma as well, because, like, in the show, I think this was meant to, like, show how Char and Garma got a connection, and then to make it seem, like, even more stinging when he betrays Garma later on. Because Garma seems to, like, trust him eventually in this, but then, you know, Char is just manipulative, he's just using Garma for his ends.
Yeah, in this case, like, he's pretty much, like, starts out with being, like, the jerk and it offends, you know, Garma or whatever. And Char's, like, you know, top of his class in athletics, math, all that stuff. And, but basically, like, you know, it's kind of like, there's some empathy to Char because, like, there's that scene when, like, you know, like, that freaking Garma is, like, hung over the chair and he's dreaming. And Char's, like, nice enough to put, like, a blanket or a jacket over him to keep him warm. And it's kind of like, you know, like, yeah, he's manipulating him, but he's very nice to him. Mm-hmm. And, but then again, like, because of, like, being so kind and doing that, like, again, he's able to manipulate Garma into thinking that the Dawn Rebellion was his idea. And he kind of puts that plan into motion to really, like... I mean, if anything, it wasn't really the zombies that's like kind of like kickstarted. I mean, everything was leading towards a rebellion, but Char just kind of accelerated that a lot quicker because of the rebellion. So really, if the 1 year war is kind of like Char had a huge plan in getting that started.
Yeah, like probably before this came out, everybody thought that it was just Guren as Hitler, and so he wanted to start a war and kill a bunch of people because he's evil. But, yeah. You know, in this case, it's actually revealed that it's more so Char at fault and also Garma because, you know, Garma is being goaded into it by Char to put his, you know, approval on the plan as well as, like, the heir to Zeon, and he's going to be the, you know, savior of the Zeon people from being oppressed by the Federation and... You know, he's being manipulated into supporting Char's plans to start an uprising against the Federation, which I guess Char thinks that this is his way of carrying on his father's legacy.
Yeah, that too, because like he's fighting for Zeon in some way, while at the same time gaining the trust of the zombies to wind up backstabbing them later. Yeah, because, like, you got, like, at this point, like, things are getting bad in Munzo, or the Republic of Munzo, where, you know, the Federation's coming in, like, they're sending in, like advanced forces in order to pacify the rebellion, which is basically, you know, they're giving backup support troops to the Federation to basically annihilate the people that stand against them in their own colony. And so, yeah, like, it's a way of showing that, like, you know, it's kind of like you want to say Char is doing it for his father's legacy and even like for the rise of Zeon. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, it's really more on the whole revenge thing. It's like a mixture of the two. And really, like, you know, like after seeing this, like, we're always taught, like, from Mobile Suit Gundam that the zombies are bad people. Dolzel was like the coolest dude ever. I mean, he's hard, but he's like, he's a really cool dude. And yeah, Garen has his own plans. And like, Cassilia's messed up, but really, like, you know, Garma's just a spoiled kid. And really, the best of them is Garma's just a spoiled kid and can be manipulated. And Dolzel is just a good, honest guy.
Yeah, he actually seems to have a, you know, an actual conscience compared to the other Zeon guys. And,
Well, Dagwin,
yes.
the father, he's also, like, he's not that bad of a guy either. Like, he's just, like, you know, he's with Garen, and Garen's, like, saying all these plans, and he's just like, Garen, you don't want to go that way. You don't want to do that. And then Garen has to kind of, like, sweet-talk his way out of, like, to get his father's, his blessing again, or his approval.
Yeah, I feel like there wasn't quite as much of this as there was in the manga, but maybe I just haven't read it recently. Like, I feel like this one was maybe turned down a little, because I do remember there being a bunch of scenes with, like, I don't think that Dagwin was really in this one very much, and I feel like he was in the manga more, but maybe that was the earlier volumes of their past that he was in.
Yeah, that's what I've been able to skim through. I'm, you know, again, no surprise, I'm still reading volume 5.
Uh-huh.
But there's, like, several conversations that I've noticed, like, between Gear and Dagwin about, like, you know, you want to do this, but this is, you know, yeah, we have our own plan, but, like, Dagwin has his own way of doing it that's, like, the least damage, and Gearin's, like, basically sort of a splitting image of Hitler almost. And the terms of the way he wants to do it, even though Gearin's way is more efficient. And because, like, both want to, you know, they want to see Zeon rise and become their own independent nation. That's, like, what it's all about. But, you know, with all these rebellions and stuff, it's the bloodshed that gets mixed into it that only accelerates it. But that's, like, kind of leading towards really sort of a bad image to, you know, what Zeon became.
Yeah. I think that with Char, though, he's, like, even more violent than the zombies in some ways. Like, even though Garen is terrible, too, you know, Char, like, he tried to destroy the Earth in Char's counterattack. He started the war here. So, like, a lot of people like Char just because he's, you know, handsome and he's cool and he's an expert mobile suit pilot.
Yeah,
and
he's got great charisma. He's a born leader. You know, he's got... you know, excellence and having that, you know, again, that's mostly just the charisma part. And he's able to back that up with, like, all this, like, experience that he has in terms of the 1-year war. And, I mean, it's kind of like Char and Char's counterattack, like him uprising to being a leader, like the same way, like, Eisenhower got elected to become president. I mean, I think the reason why people liked Eisenhower was the fact that he, you know, was a general in World War II and the Americans won. And he decided to go for president, and he got to be in office twice. I don't really know what he did that was so special when he was there for 8 years, but people voted him in twice. And it's just really on the fact of the image and the personality and the persona about him and the charisma. And that's the same way with Char, except Char's methods are way more evil and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess Eisenhower, he did do some things like built the interstate highway system and that sort of thing, so that there's some.
Then,
like,
there was also Korea, too, but.
Well, he did get us out of that mess, which Truman got us into, so he, like, end it without North Korea taking over fully. So, I mean, I think Eisenhower is a pretty good president, but, you know, Char, he's, like, he's almost as much like Hitler as Garen is, really, because he's. You know, he's just as willing to wipe out the Earth with colony drops as Garen, and he doesn't really consider anything off limits for just achieving spacenoid superiority, which, yeah, he is probably being supported during Char's counterattack because he's a war hero in the 1-year war, but, like, people, I guess they started to admire him from just how well he did at the academy and how he was willing to stand up to the higher officers who are trying to humiliate
Yeah, and that scene where like the Federation officer like, you know, slapped the glasses off Kostval's or Char's face, and then he got like the students that are backing him up, and then, you know, Garma gets in there, and there's like sort of like this whole thing where they like chanted enough and had enough of a backing, and they were so strong that like the Federation officers were intimidated, and the officer went down to pick up Char's sunglasses. And that's like the ultimate image of like, you know, these, you know, cadets are like, you know, basically like are being like kneeled to from a higher up that they're supposed to be respecting, and that doesn't happen.
Yeah. So these are like the Hitler Youth in this analogy here, because they're, you know, the foot soldiers for the hard right faction that wants, you know, war to solve all the problems and thinks that they're being humiliated based on the terms of the current peace. So they were,
yeah,
you know, they were all behind Char when Char was saying, well, isn't this demonstration just trying to show us that we're militarily inferior to the Federation and that we have to be your lapdogs forever? And he was like implying that they should be allowed more independence. And so he was really giving them a hard time. So they slapped him and knocked the glasses off his face, even though he said that he has some sort of cosmic ray condition on his eyes where
gamma
he's going to
radiation go poisoning eye cancer or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and he gave that as an excuse also to the roommate that he has, which is someone who knew the real Char in high school. And he keeps pointing out, like, you're not the same guy that I knew when I was younger. And he mentions something that some ball game that didn't actually happen, and Char's like, yeah, that was great. Okay, let's keep moving.
Yeah, that totally happened. I remember when I totally did that, and then later he's just like, dude, you're full of crap. That never happened.
Yeah, but then he's like,
I really know who you are.
Then he's like, I will support you, though, even though you're not my actual friend. You're Kostval, and you have the right to be the heir to the Zeon name, not the Zabies. And so he was really on his side, I guess, even though he was not, you know, not actually friends with him in high school.
Yeah.
And then after that, he gives him the red visor that you see in the original Mobile Suit Gundam. And he's like, this will be better in combat than those glasses. But he still wears sunglasses in combat in Zeta Gundam, so I guess it's not like you can't wear them in combat.
Zeta Gundam is his own thing, man.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really, like, this was, like, sort of like this, you know, the backstory between really why, like, how Garmin and how Char became Char. And, you know, and then they're doing the whole survival thing, like, in the colony wilderness or whatever. And, that's like when Char looks out for Garma, and Garma messes up his leg, and then
he puts the tent up around him when he gets injured.
Yeah, and then also like the fact like Char shows his leadership when they, you know, they're doing the mock battle with the Federation, and like Char's unit is the one that's basically like they kind of use themselves as sort of a scout unit for like the mortars to like be able to accurately target like these buildings and structures that they're supposed to take out. And like, you know, like, yeah, Dozel's just like, I don't know what the Federation's going to grade these students on, but I say they all pass because like this is pretty smart. And at the same time, like there's also like, you know, they were about to cancel, or Garen was about to cancel the mobile suit development plan, and then we get to see Professor Manofsky. And he explains his whole, like, technology and how to make these mobile suits better. And then of course, like, Garen's like, yeah, we'll just keep the mobile suit project on. And then, like, Dozel's crying tears of joy.
Yeah, it was like they were showing some early mobile suits and showing how it almost got scrapped, which would have, you know, really changed the history of Gundam, because there wouldn't be any Gundams, really, or anything like that. And
yeah.
But, yeah, then they went forward with it, and they showed Manofsky, which this must be his only appearance in any Gundam animated thing. Like, usually they just refer to Manofsky particles, but they don't actually show the guy, I don't think, anywhere else.
They always mention him, but they never really show, like... And they've never really seen his face. And the other thing, like, I wonder if they're going to show in the next OVA is Professor Flanagan from the Flanagan Institute for, like, the new types or whatever. So I wonder if, like, that character will be coming up in the next OVA.
Do you know what the next one is called?
Let's see.
Or if there's a release date or anything like that?
I just know it's, like, the fourth quarter of 2016.
Okay.
Which, that could mean December 2016 or early 2017.
Yeah, it could get delayed a little.
I think it might be delayed, but, I mean, I'm not too sure on that. Like, I don't want it to be delayed, of course.
But, I mean, looking at the schedule, and it's like the first one came out in April of last year, and then the next one came out in November, or, like, late October, and then this one just came out a couple weeks ago, or maybe just 1 week ago.
Yeah, the new title is Fateful Eve.
Hmm. Well, that'll cover like the start of the 1 year war, I guess, huh?
Or pretty much leading right up to it, like, because I thought about it too. Like after seeing this, I was just like, you know, yeah, there's like a lot of, because the original Gundam was basically like, there's a war, and it just happened. And then, like, this is really going behind, like, why did it happen? Like, what were the certain key points that made a war happen? Because, like, we're taught, like, the history books of World War II, but then, like, history has really shown, like, the events that really lead up to, like, really what led and the decisions to make World War II really happen, and the invasion of Poland, and, you know, the Battle of Dunkirk, and the Battle of France and all that. So this is kind of like, you know, for Gundam fans, for a series that came out, you know, gosh, it's been 37 years at this point. Yeah. We're finally getting like a proper backstory to the 1 year war and how like all these events transpired, which is interesting. But like, I guess you could say like, you know, people that are like, you know, World War II buffs or whatever, like, World War II was hyped about for a few decades after it ended. Like, they still made movies about it and talked about it so much. And so there's still this new information coming about it, like, in terms of like what was said behind closed doors by leaders and whatnot. So this is kind of like, for a fictional universe, there's so much detail to Gundam.
Yeah, there's always like people who are putting out new books about, you know, who is really at fault for World War I or World War II or any event where there's always historical revisionism where they'll find out, oh, this president, made these demands of this country in closed negotiations that are just being declassified, or, you know, there's always things that are being revealed that are influenced, like, who's really at fault in some of these cases. And like in this case, you know, people would have assumed that it was probably Gurren at fault for all this. And, you know, he plays a role, of course, but it's just as much Char and Garma, really, according to this, which probably nobody would have guessed before they had the idea to make the origin manga, which really fleshed out the beginnings of the 1 year war, since in the, you know, in the anime, they only show it from after it had already started, and because it's all focused on Amuro, so you don't get to see, like, the history of Char, really, in that. So you don't really see, like, what he was doing before he fights Amuro.
I mean, this is really, like, you know, you take all those World War II movies or whatever, that's, like, always the American side, but you never really see, like, the German side. And, like, there's been a few movies out in the past that, like, kind of explore that. Like, I really liked the movie Valkyrie with Tom Cruise when it was about, like, the failed assassination. Well, it was one of, like, the better assassination attempts against Hitler by his own men. And that's something, like, that you don't really get taught about in the history books, especially in school. Like, it's just, like, a glance over, like, here's World War II, this is what happened, that's all you need to know. And there's so much more to it than that.
Yeah, wasn't it, like there was some guy who was going to blow him up, and he, when he was speaking, and then for some reason it didn't blow up, and, you know, then he got arrested or killed or something instead.
Well, it blew up, but, like, apparently, like, it wasn't, like, set properly where, like, Hitler was supposed to get most of the blast.
Hmm.
Like, it was, like, injured or whatever, and they were, like, trying to, like, overtake the German, you know, the Nazi regime. But, like, I really enjoyed that movie, and that was a movie that, like, you know, when the Academy War came out, nobody really talked about it or cared about it, and I was like, why? This is, like, very important. But, because I thought it was a really good movie, but anyways. Well, speaking of Amuro, like, we get to see a post-credit scene at the end of Amuro arriving to Side 7 with his father.
Yep, and Taro.
Yeah, and it's basically like Side 7's been under construction for a while, and I'm guessing, like, the events, at least at the end of this OVA, must have taken place, like, 0076 or 77 or something. Somewhere around that time frame.
Yeah, they did show that showing on the screen at one point where they were, like, during the Zeon Training Academy part. At one point it showed 0076, and then it showed it changing to 0077, so that was, like, the ending part of this. And then the next one, I think it probably covers 0078 and 0079. I'm not quite sure how long the backstory part of the origin goes, because, you know, it just, like, this is different from the manga, where the manga, the first three volumes are, you know, showing the start of the one-year war with Amuro and stuff. And then it goes back and shows what happened before that, after that. Whereas in the OVAs, it starts with Volume 4, where it's the origin of Char. And so it's, like, more in chronological order. And I don't know if the fourth one does really well. I think maybe they might approve funding for future OVAs that show the bulk of the one-year war with Amuro and all of that as well. But, you know, we'll just have to wait and see if that actually happens or not. It would be pretty cool if they did adapt the whole thing.
Like, readapt it, or just adapt the manga version of it. Like, I would absolutely love that. Yeah. Or even, yeah, I want to say do a compilation movie, but, like, there's so much detail from the manga, and I would really like it to, yeah, just do Gundam The Origin, the anime. And that would be probably the best thing for, like, a 40th anniversary of Gundam, is... Yeah, basically, like, just readapting it from the manga.
Yeah, I don't know if they would do it in this format, continue to do it as OVAs, because they could, or they could do a TV series, but, you know, either option is fine with me, because it would just be cool to see that adapted, because there's a lot more to it than the original.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing to adapt it, because, like, it keeps Gundam fresh.
Right.
And... You know, like, with all, like, you know, you can't expect kids to go back and, like, you know, especially with these Marvel movies, like, they have to adapt, you know, it's better for them to adapt storylines that are, like, you know, 10 or 20 years old at this point, because they're still rather new. And, you know, like, you can't expect kids to go back and watch, like the 90s Captain America movie or the Red Brown ones from the 70s and be like, this is a definitive, you know, Marvel movie. They are far from it, and, like, you have to, like, you have to give it a new, fresh, and new spin every once in a while. Well, the Hollywood version of it seems that they do it all the time, because we've gotten so many daggum Spider-Man movies. We've changed his origin so many times, which is stupid. But that's, like, an example. It's not the best example, but, like, in terms of keeping it fresh, it's the best example out there. But, like, so if they were to adapt, you know, Gundam the Origin. For, like, a 40th anniversary release, so then, like, you know, yeah, you can get, if you want to get new people into the original series where it all started, and you want the animation to look good, because apparently anime fans hate old anime.
Yeah, let's talk shit about Daft Sum here. Like,
okay. you want to adapt it, yeah.
In the chats, he would always be like, you know, back in the day when Aviator and I would be watching, like, the old Gundams, like, in the chat, and we'd be, like, saying, oh, yeah, Zeta is pretty cool, oh, Double Zeta, this is, like, a big step down. And he would be like, hey, where should I start when it comes to Gundam? And everyone would say, oh, just start with the first one, because it takes place before the others. And he would always be like, but that was made before the year 2000, you know? And so it'd be like, okay. So it's, like, impossible to even get someone who's, you know, like, a just someone who watches 20 new season anime each year, each semester, each quarter, I guess I should say, you know, like him who watches just so much new shit and refuses to watch anything with non-1080p modern animation. You know, someone like that's never going to watch it. And there's probably a lot of people like that that are, you know, like big snobs for the modern stuff and refuse to go back and watch stuff that isn't made with modern storytelling standards. And, like, you know, like the plot doesn't really advance every week in some of the Gundams where it'll just be like a battle of the week that doesn't really affect anything. And so it's like really different from how a modern thing would be paced. But, you know, with the origin manga, it like flows pretty seamlessly where everything that happens seems like it matters. And like the actual battles are exciting and it's just really well drawn. And I just think they could make a great OVA series out of it or TV series, whatever they choose to do.
I really would appreciate it if they can do a TV series. I think that'll hit the most amount of people in a crowd to reach out for a new generation. But there's people that I know that, like, there was a guy that, like, for my it was contemporary art class, and that's when I had to do my presentation on Mamoru Oshii. And this other guy, it was the other anime fan. He did one on Miyazaki. Big, you know, what a surprise there. But there's, you know, there's a lot of good Miyazaki stuff. I'm not, you know, not saying that. But it's like, it's always like the go-to is like, oh, what about Miyazaki or Osamu Tezuka? But, like, people know them already. And, you know, no one really talks about Mamoru Oshii. And there's a book about him, an academic book. So, but my thing was, is like, I would talk to him about Miyazaki stuff. And I told him, I was like, he'd tell me his favorites, which is apparently every favorite I've ever heard. I think, which was like Howl's Moving Castle or something. I don't know. But then I mentioned, you know what? My favorite Miyazaki film is, I mean, so far is Castle of Cagliostro. And he's like, I can't watch it. The animation's too old. That was his only reason. It wasn't that he thought the story was bad or anything. It was the fact of how it looked in the animation. And this is a guy who's supposed to be like an anime expert. And that I didn't get that at all.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy. That was just like, really? Like, you can't get past Castle of Cagliostro, but you like anything that's like in the past 10 years you're going to praise and lift up, even though I don't really see the appeal of those movies either. It's like, so like really in the terms of like, I guess, like I don't want to say like meeting the demands of the millennials or whatever, but like if you're going to reach to a broader audience and the most of the anime fans or half of them and their mentality is then they can't watch anything past the year 2000. Then, like, readapting it for TV, especially off the Mobile Suit Gundam, the origin story, is the best way to do it. And hopefully Bandai will get that. I mean, like, yeah, they keep making... They can revamp the same Master Grade of the original Gundam 500,000 times, but then they can't make a new show out of that. And, like... Although I will say... speaking of Gundam, I went out... currently on Hobby Link Japan... They have the Victory Gundam Master Grade version Kotoki for like $25, and I went ahead and got that. But the sucker's already on back order, which sucks. But like, I'll get it eventually. They did a Master Grade of the Gundam, the Origin Gundam, with like the big cannon over the shoulder and like the weird looking beam rifle.
Mm-hmm.
Like that would be like if I had to get it. Like if I've been thinking about getting a Master Grade original Gundam like off and on, but if I had to do it again, or when I do it. Like, I'd rather get that version, because I was like... Because I've never seen it in the manga. I'm like, I really want a model kit to this. This looks really good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it would sell them a lot of model kits to make a full adaptation of the origin.
Yeah, I don't see how, like, Bandai's like, oh, we don't have it in the budget or the funding to, like, make another Gundam series and tackle something that's old. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you want to do something new, but, like, you also want to get back to the roots of, like, why this series is important to people. And kids aren't, you know, probably not that huge fans to watch the original show if the old animation turns them off. Which apparently it's like why we can't get original Mobile Suit Gundam on TV again. Well, which apparently never even worked out and didn't even do well in the first place 15 years ago. So.
Oh, yeah. That would never air on Toonami. They will. They will say stuff on their Q&A like. Yeah, they'll always say on the Q&A like, we'll only air certain things from before 2000. Which means, like, Cowboy Bebop and other stuff that they...
Maybe Outlaw Star. Maybe that. Because it was on Toonami before. And people are like, oh, nostalgia or Gundam Wing.
Yeah.
But nothing else.
Those are, like, borderline because those are, like, late 90s, early 2000s kind of stuff. Well,
You know, what's interesting is, like, when they did that April Fool's Toonami thing, they showed one of the episodes of Tenchi Muyo, like, one of the last OVAs.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of those that came out, like, in the late 90s. And, like, from what I saw that they put on TV, it looked really good.
Well, that, like, was from the third OVA series, which I think that was the early 2000s. Because there was
it,
like,
still looked good.
It was, like, digitally animated. Like, the first ones were, you know, hand-drawn, the first two series of OVAs, and then they... Later on, they came back with a third series of OVAs, which they ended up picking that up by Funimation because it, you know, it came out after Genion had already died, I think. So they had to get, like, different voice actors for it and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that came out, like, around the same time as Tenchi Muyo GXP, which they also aired on Toonami, like, a few months after that.
That soaker is never going to be on TV ever again. I guess, in a way, thank God I taped it off TV.
Yeah, that
when
was...
people say, like, there's like when people mention, like, GXP never made it on TV, I'm like, oh, really? I have all 26 episodes of that pile of garbage because I wanted to archive a Tenchi show off TV, and this is the last time it's ever going to happen.
Yeah, they've been like, you know, they did that because I think they were just like, we need a Tenchi show because we can't get any of the old shows back yet. Because this was, like, before they got, you know, Naruto and One Piece and Dragon Ball Z back. So mm-hmm. they had just, like, Bleach and some, like, obscure new stuff that they would pick up, like Dead Man Wonderland and Cash and Sins. So they wanted, like, something that was going to appeal to the older audience that had seen the old Tenchis on TV. And then they were like, okay, well, what's the only one that Funimation has that we haven't aired yet? I guess it's GXP. And then after, like, the first week it aired, they announced with episode 3, we're going to move it to 3 a.m. And that was, like, before they even had the second episode air an episode. And, it, you know, like, there's been a lot of bad premieres on Toonami, and none of the shows got treated that badly where it got moved back 2.5 hours just from one episode having aired. But yeah. I think that probably what happened is...
I thought they made that change, like, 2 or 3 episodes in. They're like, yep, it's at 3:30 or 3 a.m. or the death slot or something. And I'm like, but it's still racked up, like, a little over 500,000 views, which is still impressive for 3 in the morning.
Yeah, it was probably their best rated show that they've aired at 3, other than, like, the month or two that they had Bleach on at 3 after it ended.
I don't get when people online think that, like, if a show doesn't make... like, as much viewers as Dragon Ball Z at 3 in the morning, then it's a failed show. I'm like, first of all, who's going to be up regularly at 3 in the morning watching something on a Saturday night? Like, the fact that Toonami can get airing, like, ratings, like, in the almost 500,000 views, like, at that time, at, you know, on a Saturday night, to me, that's freaking impressive. Like, I mean, like, other stations are showing infomercials. Or whatever at that time of the hour. Like, you know, Toonami, you know, Adult Swim is showing, or Cartoon Network is showing anime at that time. So, you know, yeah, Toonami, I think, is doing pretty well for, you know, getting that amount of views. Everyone just looks at, like, oh, it doesn't make that number at, like, DBZ Kai or now Gundam Ironblood Orphans or whatever. It was, like, the fact that, like, what was it? The numbers came out, like, a week ago or so, and Daff was like, oh, Gundam sucks now. Because it was like, oh, it's doing so terrible. But I was like, it made 1 million views its first week. Or even the second week or whatever. I'm like, that's impressive for a Gundam show, at least in America.
Yeah, so I'm going to read some of the ratings off here just because we were talking about them. And I found when Josh posted the last couple weeks in the chat. So mm-hmm. The first week of Gundam, it was, Dragon Ball Z got 1.3 million. And then Gundam got 1.05 million. And then Hunter x Hunter got 1.037, then Samurai Champloo, 874,000, Naruto Shippuden, 802, One Piece, 729, and then Parasite, 600, and then the week after, it was 1.31 for DBZ, 1.116 for Gundam, 1.086 for Hunter x Hunter, 962 for Champloo, 852 for Naruto, 766 for One Piece, and then Parasite got 685. So this was actually up the second week from 1.05 to 1.116. So like, Gundam is actually gaining an audience, which is pretty good, you know, and he was saying, like, the first week, oh, it's done because it did so poorly, but then, you know, it got over a million still, and then Mason posted something recently about that it was one of the top premieres of the summer or something. I don't know if he just means new shows that are just starting to air, because there's not very much that premieres this time of year, but
yeah.
He said, like, only soccer was above it for new premieres.
That's right. There was the Copa soccer tournament going on this time of the year. And by the time this episode comes out, there'll already be a winner on that, I'm pretty sure. But, yeah, but, like, it's still really impressive to, like, have a show get that many numbers on a Saturday night. Like, why don't nerds understand that? Like, these people think they know how to run a TV station. They don't. Because if they did, They would know what to do, or probably fail completely at it or something. It's amazing, like, and I see why DeMarco gets so pissed off at, like, you know, like, these fans that come on there and tell him how to do his job that he's been doing for 25 years.
Yeah, I mean, he makes mistakes, but at the same time, he's made some pretty good choices, too. So.
He's made more better choices than mistakes, it seems.
And for this, it listed as being, like, all the top shows that are, I mean, I don't really understand this chart, but it says the top rated non-sports shows were on Adult Swim, and then it lists all the shows on Toonami, and it says, like, they gained ratings, and it's, you know, it's doing really well compared to where it was before Toonami took over the block, because back then it was the only anime on TV was Bleach, and they had, like, you know, maybe some reruns of Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, but there was nothing else new other than Bleach on Adult Swim.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like, you know, they only had one premiere airing, and now they've got six. So it's like they've got a whole block to draw people in, and it's not just, you better like Bleach or else we have nothing to offer you other than reruns that we've aired a bunch of times before. So it's pretty sensibly programmed compared to the way they had it when it was still Adult Swim Action, which, I mean, generally Adult Swim Action was just a mess of a block. They didn't really have very much success other than with Inuyasha and Full Metal Alchemist.
Well, they were trying to use that block to compete with, like, what was it, when Anti-Monday happened. I don't even know what the numbers were for Anti-Monday when that happened, but it did pretty well for a couple of years. I know that.
I mean, it was on there for, like, 4 or 5 years. So.
All right. It started in 2007, that summer. Mm-hmm. And it finally died May or June of 2011. So that's about 6 years.
Yeah.
6 years for an anime block. I mean, that's pretty good. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, and that was, like, the worst period for anime on TV. Like, that was when Toonami got canceled. And it was when Adult Swim had barely any anime on, and they only pulled it, like, you know, shortly before Toonami came back, like, only maybe a year or so before.
Well, yeah, they pulled Anti-Monday, like, about a year and a half, maybe, before they put Toonami, because they did the April Fool's thing, like, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was shortly after that is when they, like, put it on the air after, like, a few months later, because there was such an outcry to bring it back on. And the people got what they want. And, yeah, Anti-Monday, like, I was watching stuff that I've, like, heard about but I've never seen before. Like, Street Fighter TV and, well, MD Geist. I've never seen MD Geist before, and I taped that off the air, too.
All right.
And it was a Highlander movie. They had, like, a deal with Manga Entertainment to do that.
Yeah, they had a lot of manga shows, and it was just cool to see a lot of those shows air on the U.S. TV instead of the stuff that would air on Toonami and Adult Swim, where they never get manga entertainment shows. They only get Funimation and Viz, and now I guess they're finally starting to get some stuff from ADV. Like, they got Akame ga Kill and Parasite from ADV, but, you know, currently they don't have any shows from them on.
I would like for Pet Labor to air on TV, but that's too old, so that's not going to happen.
Isn't there some new Pat Labor that's, like, live action with CGI or something like that?
It's live action. As far as I know, I think Skrull Hunting Society is the one they're trying to fan sub it because no one else wants to touch it. And I've got like the first couple episodes. I just haven't gotten around to watching them yet. But I hear it's like has its issues, but like I'm still going to watch it. It's Pat Labor.
That'll probably never get licensed here, huh?
Probably not.
And it's not like they would air live action on Toonami anyway.
You know, I have a really good question to ask you. How did we get from Gundam to talking about TV? I forgot where that went off.
I don't know. It might have been I brought up the ratings. I know
we left Gundam 20 minutes ago.
It might have been that I brought up the ratings of the Gundam that's airing on TV right now.
Well, I think it started because Daft's stupidity comments, because you're like, I got to read out this thing from Daft, and then it just kind of went from there.
Yeah, well, we were talking about how he doesn't like old animation, and then we were talking about...
That's right, because we went to talk about, like, they need to revive Gundam and Gundam the Origins of the Way, and that was kind of the only related thing we talked about. And again, that was 20 minutes ago.
Well, I guess Iron-Blooded Orphans is related, and that's probably why they're not doing more Origin yet, because they're supposedly they're working on a second season of Iron-Blooded Orphans that's going to air in Japan after, yeah. I don't know, fall or something.
Well,
I would guess it's going to be like Double O, where they get two seasons and then it's done.
Yeah. We'll see if a Gundam The Origin happens, like a TV series, to do like a proper revival of the Mobile Suit Gundam series.
It would be nice.
I mean, as much as I love the original Mobile Suit Gundam, like... I just feel like it's like I'm really weary on like showing it to people and how they would feel because it's that old. And like, I mean, I finished up the show on Blu-ray thanks to Right Stuff. And like, I'll be honest, like there was like quite a number of animation mistakes that made it through. And I'm just like, oh man, this is hilariously bad, kind of. But like they, you know, they did what they could at the time, but it was still like, you know, it's got a good feeling to it when I'm watching it.
Yeah, it was like some of the top animators at the time, they even had, you know, budget and time constraints because they're making something on a weekly basis, so, you know, they can't do it perfectly.
Yeah. And then, like, we read off, like, what happened in the documentary, and there's everyone that worked on that show was still bitter at each other for some reason. Mostly Tomino. Or yeah. Tomino's. That may never change, but then they're, like, humbly, like, they did a very good job.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in an hour on this. Like, I mean, there's really nothing else. Like, we talked about, like, the post-credits, and that's pretty much, like, all you need to know about Gundam the Origin. And really, it's just kind of, to sum it up, like, it's sort of, like, what led Char to become the Char that we know, or have been knowing for years. But it's kind of like knowing that backstory. And I'm glad that Gundam the Origin is all out in America, and I will eventually buy the last three volumes. I know that, like, since I've been working for it's through Anderson County in South Carolina. I'm doing an internship with them for like video production, since they're doing like a more of an information site. But I had to do one on their library system, and they've got books 3 through 12 of Gundam the Origin in their graphic novel section, and that made me pretty happy. And I actually got a shot, like a pan shot of Gundam the Origin manga, like the spines and the artwork for that, when they use it as B-roll. So people that watch it are like gonna know that Gundam the Origin is at their local public library, and they should definitely check it out. I feel like when I was watching that, like I was putting that in there, I'm like, this is so biased. I don't care. This is my video. I'm the one that worked on it. I'm the one that did all this filming. And if I want Gundam, every iteration of it in this video about the library system, it's going to happen.
Yeah, they have Gundam the Origin here as well. They have like an older Gundam manga at the library, which is just called Mobile Suit Gundam, which I haven't read that, but I think it must have been.
Oh, no, that's, I think that's the one drawn by Kondo, I think, or Kazuhito Kondo or whatever. I've got the first three volumes of that. But that was like, that's basically a manga adaptation of the TV series that he did. And then like later he did those like Advance of Zeta and Camonet Sazabi units and what Kondo does best. So, big bulky mechs with big machine guns and camo nets.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to find for closing remarks some ghost thing, but I haven't found anything yet. Do you have anything you want to say?
I feel like I've been drained of closing remarks because this is our third recording in the same week.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. There's something about how Donald Trump's star got spray painted on.
Oh yeah, that was posted in the chat, which they drew like a microphone with a mute sign on it, telling him to shut up.
They drew a speaker and then they put an X over it as a way for him to shut up.
Mm-hmm. They're trying to silence Donald Trump. It won't work.
Yeah, like I don't think he cares that his star has been has got graffiti on it when it's already cleaned up at this point.
Okay, I found some ghost tweets. So, hashtag Omar Mateen was an actor. Interesting. I told you, this Orlando shooting stinks of false flag. Hashtag Orlando, hashtag LGBT, hashtag WTF. And then it has a link to a YouTube video saying, Omar Mateen's IMDb page scrubbed, removed from the Big Fix cast. And then the description for the video. Why? My only guess is they don't want people watching this scene because it will make you question everything you've ever heard about Mr. Omar Mateen. He's like the Lee Harvey Oswald of Orlando. And then the next tweet from Ghost is, Omar Mateen's IMDb credits include Love City Jalalabad, an LGBT Muslim comedy. You can't make this shit up. And he has a link to something called Love City Jalalabad 2013 Sydney Underground Film Festival. And I guess that this is... here's the description. Discover the method and productive madness behind one of Australia's wildest auteurs, George Gittos. He will reveal his filmmaking practice, screen a preview of Love City Jalalabad, and offer a world first glimpse of Snow Monkey. And then it says nothing really in the description about Omar Mateen being in it, but I guess Ghost seems to think that Omar Mateen is like an actor and that this was all, you know, this was all staged by Obama in order to take away the guns. And he was pushing this the last time we recorded too, and he still seems to be obsessed with this angle of the story. He also posted a picture of Paul Ryan with a Muslim, and he says, as I said, Speaker Ryan's pro-Islamic immigration policy makes sense now. Hashtag Trump 2016. And he's got like a picture of him with this Muslim called Aziz Poonawalla. And he's got like a beard and a little hat on. And I guess he's saying like this is proof that Paul Ryan supports terrorism.
When you said Aziz, I was thinking of the comedian like in the Arabic guy that's on Parks and Recreation. He's the comedian Aziz. That's when he said his name, I was like, wait, is he like friends with the comedian from Parks and Rec? I thought it was the same name.
Yeah, I don't think so. And then he calls for Herman Sugarcane. My man, Herman Sugarcane speaks at Trump rally. My personal favorite for vice president.
Actually, like my local talk AM station that I get in town, like they air. He does a show like every day, or Herman Cain does a show every day from like 3 to 5 o'clock or something. Wow. I heard part of it, and it was basically him just saying like the Republicans are doing good things, and that's not what the liberal media is showing, and blah blah blah. And I was like, okay, that's all I remember.
About what you'd expect from Herman Cain.
Yeah. Okay, I've got some closing remarks. So, I'm on GundamGuy.blogspot.com, a post from 2015 in October. It's a Gundam The Origin 3 promo, and I'm reading the comments, so somebody called Unconfirmed Aeon stated on the poster that there was like, is that a Zuda in the poster? OMG, now it's confirmed to take place during MS Igloo. Other people responded, hate to disappoint, but it's a prototype Zaku. Another person said, it should be a Zaku 1, but the origin version seems to have a different arm and so a different shield. And another anonymous says, no. Another anonymous says, no and no. You have no idea what you're talking. That's the MS-04 early Zaku. It can't take place during Igloo because Igloo is during the 1-year war. Darkness 7 Strike says, it's not a Zuda, it's a prototype Zaku. Tucker O'Donnell responds, I love the MS-04. Can't wait for its kit. Another Anon guy says, ignoring the facts that the unit clearly has an O3 printed on the shoulder. Another anonymous person says, this guy appears acting like he knows everything, but you're wrong too, bruh. That's the O3. The O4 is the yellow. You can clearly see the number 3 on the shoulder, you jackass. Ha ha. So, we have some false flags and some conspiracies going on into what mobile suit was used in Gundam The Origin 3 that they were working on the prototype. Is it a Zuda? Is it a Zaku 1 early prototype? The internet is always right.
I couldn't even tell what some of them were trying to say. Like, with one of them was saying, this can't be set during Igloo because that's during the 1-year war. But, like, couldn't they be working on a suit that will later be used in the 1-year war? Like, I don't see why.
Well, the thing is, okay, Igloo. The Zuda is made from a different company. And the Zakus are made by Xionic Corps engineer or whatever. It's, like, by the military. And then, like, the guy who made the Zuda is a private mobile suit investor manufacturer person. That's what I remember from MS Igloo. And so there was, like, in MS Igloo, yeah, it takes place during the 1-year war. But, like, it was a one of the OVAs that was strictly about the Zeons is it was a competition between the Zuda would outperform the Zaku unit or something like that. And so, yeah, I mean, the guy that, if you want to get nerd technical, because that's what this podcast is all about, especially when it comes to Gundam, is that maybe, you know, this is a Zuda design. And maybe there's some sort of alternative thing where they might put in there where, like, oh, the designer that made this mobile suit in Igloo is the designer for the Zuda, but he got kicked out. So he was like, F it, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and make my own mobile suit. Who knows? That's not really explained, so I'm not even worried about it. But, I mean, all these mobile suits are in the prototype stages, and they're claiming, like, no, it's MS-03, MS-04. No, it's not. It's a Zuda. And, like, freaking who cares?
Except these people. It didn't really look like anything I recognized, but it was, like, not a completed design, you know? So that's why you can't really tell what it is.
It looks like a Brocken Labor from freaking Pat Labor. Oh my gosh, I just broke the I cross series, John. I don't know what I was thinking. Intertwining Pat Labor with Gundam. Shame on me.
This is the second time Pat Labor's come up on this. Maybe we need to review the third movie at some point or something.
I do have it. I just not in a rush to watch it anytime soon. I don't know. Do you want to give it 3 years like we did between 1 and 2?
I guess. When was the last one? 2015 or something?
Yeah, because that's when we took an Indiegogo request, and someone paid us to review Pat Labor 2. It was Cody Billings, that requested that. I got his name right. It counts.
Yes, well, thanks for the money.
Yeah. We actually used the last bit of it to pay for hosting for this year, so if we don't get any donations, I'll just pay out of pocket for $26 next year. It's no big deal. But hey, we're covered for hosting for the next year. Or at least they keep our .com site. So
there's a PayPal button on the AOYpodcast.com, right?
Yeah, I have not bothered to remove it because some people have donated in the past. I mean, like somebody did a long time ago, and then I used that money to pay for to move the .com. Mm-hmm. And we just have to keep it up it's $26 every year, which still is not that bad, man.
And didn't someone also contribute what you used to buy a Hokuto no Ken figure?
I don't remember the figure.
It was like took a bunch of pictures of it fighting your cat or something.
Yeah, I did that for a website a long time ago. I didn't get rid of the figure. It's in my closet.
That might have been like the Cybernauts podcast. It was a long time ago, yeah.
Maybe. Dude, I don't even remember that. Whoever's listening, if you donate it, please send us an email explaining why did you forget that, because I totally did if it happened. But then again, that might have been like 4 years ago.
Probably was, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know, man. I'm pretty good with this. So actually, I'm gonna copy this link so people can know where to find the truth, come up with their own conspiracy, and seeing if it's a Zuda or a Zaku early prototype. We'll see. So I can just make a post thing and just post that in there or something. So it's all good.
Are you gonna put that on the show notes page?
Yeah, I'll throw it in the show notes somewhere. So we're good.
Okay. Well, I guess that's it for this episode. We got 1 hour 15 minutes, which is longer than the actual Gundam episode, so that's fine.
Well, I mean, we talked about the show in about 25 minutes or so. And then the rest of it was like, anime on TV, numbers, statistics, stuff you don't probably care about. And then, oh crap, Gundam the Origin. How do we save this podcast? all right. I don't even know when our next review. Like, we've got, like, I've got so many. This is just adding to the backlog. We might have enough reviews to make it all the way to episode 100, John.
What are we at now?
Well, E3 is going to be number 92, and that's coming out Monday. Mm-hmm. And I'll go ahead and count down what I've got in my folder. So, doop 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 doop. Give me just a moment. Pull up that folder. All right, so we got Gundam Evolve. Well, E3's coming out, so that's all right. So after E3, we got Gundam Evolve. We got our Deadpool and X-Men review. Magic Users Club. We got this one that's 4.
So that's 5 including the E3?
Yeah, that's 5. So that would take us to like 97, I think.
Okay. And then probably we'll have to do
Crap. I got Animazement. So that's Animazement's the other one that I did, so that's the 6th one, and that's number 98. And then there was like some other recordings I did a couple months ago that I'll probably just put those out after episode 100, so that's not even a big issue.
Oh.
Yeah, so then we got what, 99 and 100, so we have to come up with something for those.
Well, probably the Magic Users Club TV show and Cobra TV show.
Yeah, or unless you want to do something really, really special for episode 100. I mean,
maybe Cobra would be special since we've been teasing it for so long.
Yeah, that's true. I figured we could do... Okay.
I still haven't watched it, so that's something I really need to do, but I've been like...
Well, we got plenty of time. You got like 12 weeks, 3 months or something maybe, depending on how quickly I put these out, which quickly, that's funny. All right. Maybe, like, since I'm going to say it now, maybe I can put this out as quick as possible. So then, like, there's enough time. But, all right, anyone who's listening to this podcast, whoever that may be, episode 100, we have an email on our website that you can click and send us an email. Please suggest what we should do on episode 100. I'm serious. Like if you've never written or wrote anything on our podcast and have no reason to, like, I am down for suggestions on what we should do for episode 100. And I will put this episode out soon enough so then that we have, like, 3 months for people to try to write in and say, this is what you should do for episode 100. Should we do a call-in episode? Should we do emails? Because I've got a couple of them. I keep getting one from somebody that, like, says that I need to do, like, a certain anime for a panel. And I've started them, I haven't read them yet. Mm-hmm. And that's the only one, that's the only kind of technical fan mail that I've gotten so far. I think there might be another one, I'm not sure. But there's that. Yeah. Or I guess I'll just go ahead and say the email address. It's aoypodcast@gmail.com. So hit that up. You know what I'm really bad about, and maybe that's why no one writes to us, is the fact that I don't ever plug in our social media stuff. Like, I don't ever say what our email is. I don't say what our Twitter is or our website, because I'm assuming the people that find this have already can see the website and find that all those things are there. Like, yeah. I don't want to treat people like they're stupid, but I'm just saying, like, if it's right there and you don't know how to email me, when it says email on the left-hand side of the page, and it's, like, near the like PayPal or whatever, like, it's right there. Like, it says email, like how it's always been since email was invented. And if people can't figure that out, then, like, I don't know how to help you. But this could be the case for, like, you know, Chris Chance believes that people are too stupid to pay him, give him money through PayPal. It's just that nobody wants to do it. So that this may be the case where nobody wants to email us. I don't know.
Yes, well, give us some comments and some emails, and you can tweet at us at AOI Podcast, and we have a Facebook group as well.
That I barely promote. We have a Facebook group, so just, I guess, search Anime Investigator, and it'd be one of those groups that has, like, a lot of, like, the most amount of numbers of people. There's one that's got a few people. And then there's one that's got, like, more than that. And that you want to go to the one that's got more than that. I think we're in the 20s or 30s on that. I don't know.
What? There's, like, an imposter group on there that has a few fans?
No, it's not a imposter. I don't know of an imposter group. But, like, I made a generic one that's, like, basically, like, automatically post up our stuff that I get email dates or, like, email updates for that I don't even bother promoting. But, like, I promote the one that I post all our stuff in. And that's the one that I've got the link to the Facebook thing on our website. So please, please send us something. I don't care what your suggestion is. Like, the probably people are going to be like, you need to drink piss and die or something. I'm like, well, we'll take that in consideration. I hope we get a second email to counterbalance that out. You guys say that was a Zuda to Zaku drink, you know, eat shit and die.
I don't think we usually get hate mail other than if it's daft.
Or if it's if I go to conventions and be like, I don't get this piece of art, and then I got like five people that are mad at me because I post in the Facebook group and they're like, how dare you? And I'm like, I don't get it. That's all I said.
Or that time that we
did you saw it? I mean,
that time that we bashed some Toon Zone guys, and then we got some angry Toon Zone guy ranting on our comments.
Which, don't we believe it's like Hellcat, probably? It might be him, I don't know.
I have a feeling, yeah.
That was like 3 years ago or something, I don't even remember. Three years ago?
It was when we put out our Seed review, I think.
That might have been 2 years ago, yeah.
Or Seed Destiny.
They were both in the same episode, because I was like...
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it was like, it's 2 hours of me going, why do people like this show? I don't get it. All right, we need to shut this down.
Yeah. So. All right. I will forget all the bad things that have happened.